Let us lead with the tumbling bond market, driving up the interest rates we pay. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The benchmark 10-year interest rate started this young month at 1.69%. It's been up, up, and up, and this morning it's up to 1.93%. Christopher Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial. What do we call that, Chris? A lot, I guess.
It is. It's an absolutely substantial move, David, especially when interest rates are as low as they are. Every quarter point is a substantial chunk of the whole. So it's not only a big move, but it's one that few people expected at the beginning of the month.
Well, all my friends here listening want to know, why did my interest rates go up so sharply? Theories?
Well, and the answer, I think, comes down to two things. The first is that traders are convinced this phase one trade deal is a real thing. It's going to happen. Now, you know, just a word of caution, they felt pretty much the same way about the trade deal in May as well. So we'll see how that works out. But the other reason is, I think it was in the October 30th press conference, Fed Chairman Jay Powell sounded absolutely certain they have cut interest rates enough this year to give us a robust economy from here out.
All right. Well, we shall continue to report the data as it comes in. Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you for this.
Thank you, David.
This Sunday, Spain will hold its fourth general election in 4 years. Though the Socialist Party picked up the most seats in parliament last April, its leader, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, has not been able to form a coalition to pass anything into law. And political divisions are mounting, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Three big issues loom over Sunday's election in Spain.
One is the deadlock itself. It's, you know, let's get somebody who can govern.
That's Gail Allard, an economics professor at the IE Business School in Madrid. She says two is Catalonia, where violent protests erupted last month over the imprisonment of separatist leaders. The far-right party Vox has been gaining ground with its tough stance against separatists.
And then the third issue is the economy that's slowing down to about a 2% growth rate, which is fine.
But high unemployment and government debt are also weighing on the country, says Heather Conley with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It really still has struggled with the type of good quality jobs that provide meaningful benefits and employment. And that's in part what's driving voters' frustration with the current political stalemate.
A stalemate that, if it continues after this election, could be a further drag on growth. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
You must have heard this expression, college is wasted on the young. Well, imagine what you would have learned if you approached the material not distracted by teenage things and with the wisdom that life experience brings. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell saw some of this in action. Hello, Chris.
Hey, David.
Where were you?
So I was at Notre Dame, and I participated in its Inspired Leadership Initiative. And this is a program, it's geared for people who, you know, they've had a successful career, and then they spend an academic year at Notre Dame, and they think about, what is it that I want to do next? There's a couple of others. Stanford has one, Harvard, University of Texas, Austin. And these programs highlight what I think is one of the major shifts in our society over the next several decades, which is older adults coming back to campus to acquire new skills, credentials valued by employers, or maybe to start a business.
Are these programs that are sequestered? The more mature students are off by themselves, or do they mix the populations in?
They mix the populations in, and that's absolutely critical. So the fellows, you typically in these programs are called fellows. They do some of their stuff, you know, with the other fellows. But no, they're taking classes with undergraduates. And when you talk to the professors really enjoy it because these older students bring experience and knowledge and conversation to the class. So I think for everybody, young and older, it's enriching.
Now, you mentioned some pretty elite institutions. The price tag for something like this must be pretty high.
It's really high. They're very expensive, but there are other options that cost less. So, for example, at the University of Minnesota, there's the Advanced Career Initiative, and it's about costs about half of what some of these elite programs cost. And then there are some just shorter programs, you know, 4 months long. So there is experimentation going on, David, all across the country and at different levels, different types of institutions.
But you're describing something that sounds like, you know, boutique programs within these larger campuses. I mean, could that somehow have a wider impact on what we regard as higher ed?
I think so. So the pioneers, the people who are doing it right now, they look upon themselves as experimenters. And what they really believe is that this is just the beginning of a fundamental shift in higher education. We're living longer. We're working longer. And the notion of you graduate from college in 2019, you might have a 60, 70-year career. And so you're going to need to upgrade your skills. And so what these programs are doing is trying to figure out what's the best way to create a multi-generational higher ed system.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And the collapse of the initial stock offering of WeWork, the shared office-based company, has become a symbol of new economy hype. The high-flying and some say high-handed ways of former CEO and chairman Adam Neumann also get attention. Now a group of 150 WeWork employees have sent a letter to their management asking to be treated with dignity and respect. These designers, engineers, maintenance, and cleaning people acknowledge that major layoffs are coming to the company and say they don't want to be defined by the image of the company's founder. To quote the letter, "We are not the Adam Neumanns of this world." Neumann left with a $1.7 billion severance arrangement. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.